apply at other public offices and that is to make sure that it doesn't become susceptible to influence by the president and any other government. That protects their independence. And therefore, Parliament is the upper house that determines that benefit of Parliament. And that the power that gets derived from the
we are all aware that the president has already given an approval of a percentage across the board for public office bearers, and that applied to them as well. And the president did so after he was advised by the Independent Commission on the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, which undertake a very laborious exercise, do the consultation, get the experts, do the analysis, do the comparative, look at the GDP, look at the inflation, look at the fiscal, look at what is the impact of any increase on any person, and advise the president. And the president, having taken that advice, the president will basically then apply his or her mind on the recommendation and give approval. I will come to this aspect because one of the aspects which Judge Bertelsmann dealt with in the application by the regional magistrate. But I wanted to state up front that the judges, with respect to the judges' salary, there are no concerns or objections raised from the judges per se. And therefore, the 5% recommended by the president. So the 5.5% recommended by the president respect of judges could be currently approved by this committee without any hassle. And from our side, is that once we've got the approval, we'll then put the whole process in motion to implement the dispensation for judges. However, in respect of magistrates, and I think the notice that comes from the honourable members indicate the increments, the percentages. For example, the salary of the Chief Justice will move from 2.2 million 27 through 8 to 2,360,000. That's a 5.5%. The second one, the Deputy Chief Justice will move from 2,013,525 to 2,124 rands, etc., in the schedule.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I just want to confirm the amount. Does it also equalize the 5.5%?
Yes.
It's the same for both the magistrate and the judges?
Yes.
5.5.
So the amounts I'm reading basically are the adjustment based on the 5.5%, and it's across the all the judicial officers. President of the Supreme Court of Appeal will move from 2.3, will be the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal and equal to the Deputy Chief Justice of the Republic, and therefore will end 202,124,269. Deputy President of the Supreme Court of Appeal will end
I'm sorry, you mean 2.2 million, not 202 million.
Mm.
Okay.
2.2 million. A judge of the Constitutional Court will earn 1.8 million, 1,888,315 from 1.789 million. Judge of the Supreme Court, and then they've put all the levels in terms of a hierarchy of the judges. So from the judge of the Constitutional Court, we've got a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal will earn similar with the judge of the Constitutional Court 1.8. Then we've got a judge president who's the next level will earn 1.77339 from 1.678046. Then you'll get a deputy judge president who'll earn 1.652524 from 1.566. 089. Then we've got the judge of the High Court, judge of the Labour Court will end from 1.5, will end now 1.534248 from 1.454543. these salaries, honorable chairs, do not include other service benefits which they get by virtue of regulations which are determined separately. So there will be, you know that just are entitled to motor vehicles. They drive them and they can use that vehicle until 120 kilometers for 4 years, whichever happens first, then they can change them. For other cars, when they retire, they can buy them off at market value, etc. They are also entitled to some other benefits, resettlement allowances, whatever, if they move from one era to another, judge of the constitutional court and judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal. So this basically relates to those which have been determined. Now, as I said, there are no concerns or queries about these recommendations, and obviously if the committee can approve this one, it will assist the process so that we can target to implement them moving forward.
Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to confirm if that the same presentation was, understand that the President has a say in terms of recommendation. I just want to confirm if this presentation was submitted also to the National Assembly and if it was approved there. This recommendation, thanks.
My colleague is speaking now. The portfolio committee is sitting on the very same matter, and I think that's the approach that will be presented to them today, yes, so that there's synchrony between the two houses, etc.
Zizi?
Yeah, Chair, we can do nothing about these things. Whatever it's already been decided, I've got a lot of concerns with these things, Chairperson. Number one, it might not be proper to discuss it now, but I just want to bring it under your attention that when a judge or a magistrate are traveling, the tax on his reimbursement is different from the tax on a member of parliament. I don't know why is that. They pay less tax than us when they are reimbursed as judges and magistrates and regional magistrates with the same traveling. And I've got a concern of that thing. I've got a big concern of that thing. We've been taxed 40% when we travel. And judges are not being taxed, or magistrates are not being taxed 40%. I think it's about 28% that they are being taxed. And I want to know why it is. Maybe the answer's not here today. I've got a big concern with this thing, Chair, and we must take it further as a committee, write to the people and find out what's happening. Otherwise, there's nothing that we can do now. We just need to approve this thing.
Honorable Blue, Honorable Matilda, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you very much. I really share the sentiments expressed by Mr. Gundaye. You know, Chairperson, I think that there must be another approach somewhere with the committees, because we are becoming rubber stamps now of a thing that has already been decided and it's only coming here for approval. Maybe if we work out something before even this process is being approved by the President, signed by the President, it must first come to Parliament, and Parliament must debate on this. You know, I was just showing my colleague Ntate Matila now. My mayor in Kroonstad is earning more. The salary of the mayor there is more than my salary. Yeah. And I can tell you that councillors in local government, they are not working like us, who must be here 8 o'clock, 7:30 or whatever, and go back home late at night. I'm saying maybe if we can be part and parcel of deciding on this, maybe the judge must come, this judge who is proponent and this committee, then we interrogate. But there's nothing that we can do now, Chair, to approve this thing. Every year, it's the same thing. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson? Yeah, I agree, there's nothing we can do. But, Chairperson, I think
there's something that is, I think, is slightly unfair. Because if you go to the judges, what you have here is their salaries only. The other benefits do not reflect. Mm. You see? Now, it means, in terms of their this is not exactly what they're earning. That's what it means. Because that's what the input we got here.
Mm.
It means their salaries are much more higher than this. Because when you take all public representatives, everything else is included.
Yeah.
Everything else is included. Now, with the judges, there's something different. And I think this must be noted. Even if we pass this, we must indicate, you see, that we're passing this with this particular concept, you see, that not everything else about this category of public representatives or office bearers, not everything else is included in the salaries that is made public. There's something hidden there, you know, and we don't think that is correct, you know, because if the president's salary, you know, is divided in terms of that is the whole package, and everything else is divided to say in terms of his you know all those things are included in that particular package. Why can't the judges once be included in that particular package? You see? And that is the situation. If a car is bought for him, it means there's an extra, and they don't drive small cars. They don't drive small cars. That means an extra 600,000-700,000 rand on top of this particular salary. I'm not talking about the petrol, I'm not talking about what he's being paid for, the traveling issues that you are raising here. You see? I'm not talking about all that, just the car alone. I mean, we everybody knows that every politician's, this is the car allowance that you get, and that's how it operates. Besides the petrol claims and whatever, but, you know, in most cases you must travel on your own. You see? And that is the situation. I'm just saying this concept because, to me, this commission is led by a judge. And I will conclude at some point to say he's looking after himself. Because this person is a judge. He is not looking at the entire, everybody else. Whatever recommendations that he goes with is about looking after judges. At some point when we came here, there was an outcry from judges that this pay, and everything was then addressed. You see? And now it's about themselves only. And that's the point. Because it came to Parliament, we were addressing it here. It came to Parliament, you see. And we said, no, that is not correct. Now the opposite is happening, you see. The opposite is happening. Because if you take this salary, it means these judges are any more than the president himself. If you add all those extra things that we're talking about. We don't know exactly what are those extra things. What is that? Take into consideration that these judges are judges for life.
Honorable Simande.
I think it's my personal view, Chair, in terms of this, and is that what is presented to us, what we are required to make a decision on, is the 5.5%. It's not a review of the structure of the whole benefit or remuneration structure of the public bearers and public representatives. And also, Chair, to note that the what is the practice of the, is so that, Chair, we don't send wrong messages here that we bashing whatever it is, the processes, and that as the committee here, we respect the independence of that judge. So the process, as it were, Chair, is that there is a process. We have representatives of Parliament to make presentations to the judge. There's quarterly consultative forum meetings which looks into the benefit structure and all that. We do lose the battle, that's the reality. But that process is clear. So, Chair, we don't send message that there's no process of representation. There is a process of representation for ourselves on our side. There is in that process, the judge makes a determination taking into consideration all of those factors that convinces the judge in a particular way. Well, I guess those matters, it's matters that we would perhaps require a different process of engagement for any other concerns, I think, that are there. But what is tabled before us, Chair, is that here is this 5.5% that has been recommended by the judge across the board, and that's the principle. And we see addressing ourselves, in my view, Chair, as my colleagues are saying, we can't, I mean, it's a given that this thing is structured in that way. But if we are recommending a total overhaul or review of this process of remuneration, which, by the way, is done everywhere in the world, that there is an independent judge that decides on these things, I'm sure members will read this in the Australian study tour that the WIPS have undertaken, that how bad is that system of remuneration from Australia itself for members and judges. So I'm just wanting to underscore those points, Chair, and in essence say that I'm proposing for the approval of 5.5%, Chair. That is recommended by the President to us. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I think what we should do, we should hear what the members are saying, but I think we should separate the judges and the magistrates. We should separate the two. Because I think a few days ago, last week, there was a judgment ruling on the magistrates who expressed unhappiness and concerns in taking the government or department to court on their remuneration, and I think judgments have been ruled. I can't say in their favor, but it has been ruled that I think there's a remuneration board that sits on this, and I think obviously the remuneration board have to relook at the position of the magistrates. So I want to recommend that we support the department's recommendation on the judges, but that we ask that we do not approve the one for the magistrates based on the fact that the court has actually asked the department to engage with the magistrates for fairness, and it will be in contradiction now if we going to approve the magistrates today, while there's still more consultation to take place. So I would like to recommend that to this committee. Because the magistrates have raised a number of concerns, and I think it was told to us about two or three meetings ago about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then what will be the implications for not approving to the magistrates, while you say, on the other hand, the issue is being looked into?
Well, the magistrates have themselves asked for the process to be continued and to follow. That's why they follow the particular process, because they are not happy. So it means we must allow the process to be continued, and that advisory board that sits on the magistrate's position or remuneration relook according to the judgment that was given. I think that is important. Otherwise, we're going to make a mistake.
Chairperson, let me start with the first one. No? I'm not saying we must not approve this area, but Chair, if you look as to who is sitting on this board, you don't even have a single member of parliament sitting there. You see? But you have a judge who has an interest. There's no independence there. Because
Let us deal with the issue at hand. The issues that we are trying to don't belong here.
Chair.
And I think let us address ourselves to the proposal made by Honorable Joseph that we approve the judges, and then we leave out the magistrate.
Honorable, that is the first point. The second area,
Honorable, Honorable Matilda.
I'm going to Joseph's issue. You're asking me to do the deal with it.
But I have not recognized you. For now. Allow me to recognize Honorable Manzini, Honorable Zimande, yourself, Honorable Bloom, in that order. JJ and Commission.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to support what has been said by Honorable Joseph. That in the meantime, we look at, we approve what is at hand now. Thank you for the judges.
I'm saying that the recommendation, Chair, as it stands, says 5.5% across the board. Now, the review of the levels, if the magistrate, and I think they are not saying it should not be 5, but I don't know. I'm not privy to the processes of the magistrate, as it were now, Chair, in terms of whether they are questioning, just like my other colleagues, you know, that the benefit structure, as it were, whether they are questioning 5.5%. In my view, 5.5% is recommended, and I'm saying, Chair, and I'm not also privy to the information as to how many have magistrate met and have agreed as the entire magistracy. To challenge is, or it's a component that is dissatisfied with that. So to and therefore, Chair, I feel that I stand with my proposal that 5.5 across the board public representatives that are subjected to the independent remunerative Act of office bearers per se. That let's remain with that principle, that across the board, and that when, as and when the magistracy or the magistrate that are in court challenging something, whatever they challenging, those things that will be factored if on the court order at that time. And that would be the work of the judge to deal with that, Chair. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll have to stop the process because somebody is challenging a decision on recommendation of 5.5. So in my view, Chair, is that let's stick to that principle that this 5.5 is recommended, and members of parliament, if they have issues about the structure, they must go where they're supposed to go. Judges must go, magistrates, they must go where they're supposed to go. But for now, yeah, we are seated with this situation, and we need to factor these things in within this current financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Matilda.
Chair, I want to, you see, the principle around the 5% I agree with. I don't have a problem. And I think we need to, for everybody else, 5.5%. And I want to endorse what Member Nzimande is saying.
No, continue. Normative.
I'm not sure if you're hearing because you might be asking questions.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm saying the first point is around the issue of the 5% across the board, 5.5%. I want to endorse that. That is the first area. The second area is
both judges and magistrates.
Yeah. The second area, I think 3 weeks ago, the reason why I won't agree with Member Joseph, there's something that we passed here which was solving a problem where magistrates were saying, you know, this process of them waiting for parliament or whatever to come and pass this, it's a problem, you know, because everybody else throughout all departments were getting their salaries immediately as soon as a decision has been taken and it's implemented, you know? Now, for us to delay that process again is going to be another problem, you see. The issue of them not being satisfied can be resolved through the process we're talking about. Yeah? But in terms of this, I think let us pass it, let us go forward, so that we also solve this other problem, you see. It was just 3 weeks ago, that's what we dealt with. Yeah, you see. Thank you, sir.
Before Honorable Gunda, Patricia, there is something that you want to bring to the attention of the committee.
Sorry, Mr. Matilo is referring to the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. It actually didn't deal with magistrates, it dealt with prosecutors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bloom, Honorable Gunda.
No, Chairperson, no, I will support. Let's second this thing and approve this thing. Chairperson, you see, the magistrates, here is the magistrates' complaint. But you know, it's also unfair to us to come to the meeting, and Joseph is raising a very important point. But you see, we don't have the benefit in reading what their complaint is saying. I went through it now. There's a lot of sense that these people grievances and complaints, but we don't have the time. I mean, we find this thing now in the meeting to apply amendment. So it will be suicide if we just say no. We can't approve this thing. Let's approve it for now, but we must also say we are recommending, I am recommending, Chair, that next time the committee must be part and parcel, or Parliament must be part and parcel before any approval. We approve it now, but next time we must first sit and talk about it. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Gunda?
Yeah, Chair, I also agree. But Chair, you see, I really want us to approve this, but make strong recommendations. You see, Chair, there are a lot of recommendations made in meetings to the departments. It never gets implemented. And that's my biggest concern. We speak here this morning, Chair, and you stop Honorable Matila to speak on there's not a member representing us on all that. This very same government are driving an issue that says we must close the gap in the inequality. Look to these salaries. It will never happen in our lifetime. So all I'm saying, Chair, we accept this, but we must make strong recommendations that we really need to meet these people and ask them, because judges are getting their salaries for the rest of their lives.
Gunda, the same way I requested Honorable Matilda, the issues that you are trying to raise do not belong here.
Hey, Chair, we must raise this issue. We must speak.
Not here. Not here. Commissioner?
Why am I trying to approve something that does not belong here?
Thanks, Chairperson. I've been covered by the... Can I continue?
Yes, continue.
I'm covered with former speakers, and then my question to the department is that, is it a tradition that this committee must sit simultaneously, national and this one? If it is, since when? Because it's a catch. This one will approve now, the other one sometimes, you know, I'm just wanting to...
Honorable members, I also want to bring to your attention before we conclude on this matter, these two letters that we have received. How are we going to respond to the writers of the letters? Because this one from Annalene Lassen, I will not go through the whole letter, but in concluding her letter, she said, in the light of the above, she has cited the concern that she is raising with regard to this salary structure. And then she concludes by saying, in the light of the above, I respect the one from Magistrate Annalene Lassen. This one. Yes. One, two, third page. Third page.
saw her written submission, and the other one is just an annexure of the judgment that was handed down.
Yes, the third page. She said, in the light of the above, I respectfully submit that the notice and the schedule cannot and should not be approved, and that your committee should recommend that it should not be approved by the NCOP. These issues have been dragging for some time and should be attended to instead of being postponed or delayed any further. Come again. I'm willing to respond to any questions which members of the committee may have as well as to appear before the committee should I be invited to do so. This other one from Joasa, on page 3. Page 3.6. It says failure to implement these recommendations and change of mind by the IRC in rectifying the salary disparities between magistrates and public prosecutors has resulted in unprecedented anger among magistrates as a whole. Some have even been calling for an industrial action, while others have opted to submit a petition signed by hundreds of magistrates to the Chief Justice. We would regret the day that magistrates take to the streets because nobody is willing to listen to them. Attending to these measures and giving us a hearing can avoid a lot of embarrassment which can take place if magistrates realize that we as their leaders are not being given a platform to voice their cries. I'm raising these two issues, honorable members, in the light of the proposal made by Honorable Joseph, that we should only approve the judges and leave the magistrates so that the process that is now unfolding will try to address those issues that have been brought to our attention. No, I'm proposing, I'm making a proposal on the instrument. Honorable Matira.
You see, Chair, you said to me now, this matter does not belong to us. Now you are reading this letter. You are reading this letter to us. You are bringing this matter back to us. You see? And I'm saying, you see, you can't want to solve another problem this way and solve another problem the other way. Because this is, I will propose that besides us getting this information around magistrates getting less than prosecutors, you know, those are issues they are raising in this letter. You know, but let us get the commission coming here to come and explain as to why and how what determination. No.
Can we give Honorable Matila a chance?
I'm saying because it is this the commission that has made recommendations, whilst they did not, possibly, what I found out here, because a lot of people are crying that there hasn't been any proper consultation with them, people that are involved, you see. Because they would have, if there was consultation, they would have resolved this problem of the ministries long ago.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the way they've resolved the issues of the judges. Remember when the issues of the judges came to us, when they were crying that they were not saying this was the problems and all that, you know. Now we address the judges' issue, you know? We want to, you know, there are all these problems. Because the commission, if they are here, we are able to then ask further questions. Questions that members are asking here. As to why this, why that, how to address that thing. So that, having heard from the commission, or we bring these people first, they give us that input, no? Then we go to the issue around the commission coming here to come and explain. You see? Because it is them that has determined this. It is them. It is not the department. It is them. You see? Now, that is one area. So that we can then deal with all these problems that are there to avert this unhappiness and amongst a range. Because that might bring up a lot of other issues that we can question and deal with. And that's the point I'm raising. I will therefore then call that we don't even approve the judge's salaries. You see? So that both the judge
justice suffer the same thing that the magistrates are suffering.
Don't be emotional, Honorable Matilda.
I'm not emotional. I'm saying...
emotional. Honorable members, can I give... Before that, Honorable, can I give Dr. Kosana to address the committee?
Thanks, Chair. I was opening the act basically to remind myself what are the powers of this of Parliament is. Parliament's power is not to rubber stamp, it's to approve. And in the process of approval, Parliament can go through a parliamentary process and hear everybody, etc., for that process. But there's one aspect I wanted to bring to the attention of the House. The service and the remuneration, service and allowance of members of public office bearers are determined in terms of the IRC Act. That Act does not require, does not give Parliament any role at all. It's an independent process that affects everybody who is a public office bearer. And the Act provides a mechanism in terms of how they should go about doing that. And they should consult, they should do investigations, they do everything, etc. So the process is there and it ends there. And then it recommends the president and the president approves. It ends there. It's only in respect of a judicial officer that Parliament has got a role. That role does not come from the RC Act. It comes from the Magistrates Act. So, the Parliament cannot deal with salary determination of any other person, other judicial officer, because they would not have the legal competence to do so. You get your legal competence from the Magistrates Act. And I've just opened that section, which I want to read, because I think it's important, it must clarify the role of Parliament. Hence I'm saying it's not a rubber stamping function, and Parliament can, in terms of its own rules, determine how they can arrive at that decision. Whether they want to listen to any person. Hence, I wanted to say, when I presented, I said, let's start with the judges first, because I wanted to give a background on the magistrate, which could have assessed Parliament. It will be very unfortunate if Parliament decides on the magistrate without hearing people when they've asked to be heard. I mean, they've written to Parliament as an assembly of people. They want to make views, and they may need to be heard. And not that Parliament must listen to them, but they've made their submission to Parliament. So you may decide on another issue. If you improve in there. It says, Section 12 of the Magistrates Act deals with the salaries of magistrates. Subject to the provision of this act, any person who shall be in respect, blah, blah. And then, right? A notice issued in terms of one, because the president issued a notice on the termination. Now it goes on, a notice issued in terms of Section 1 shall be tabled in Parliament within 14 days after permission thereof. If Parliament is then in session, or if Parliament is not in session, within 14 days after the commencement of its next ensuing session. If Parliament by resolution disapproves such a notice or any provision thereof, that notice or that provision, as the case may be, shall lapse to the extent to which it is disapproved with itself from the date on which it is so disapproved. Which means if Parliament disapproves that, it will lapse and it will be required of the President to determine and issue another notice of termination, etc. The lapsing of the period goes on to do with that. And then the salary payable to by a member shall not be reduced except, okay, it talks about, all I'm saying is that one, Parliament has got an approval responsibility of any notice that is issued by the President, which determines on the advice of the RC. RC advises the president on the judges, on the salaries of judicial office bearers. RC deals with all other people's salaries, but there's a dispensation that touches judicial officers. And when Parliament considers the dispensation, it must derive its power from this particular act, not the RC, and apply it to the commission as far as it pertains to the magistrate. Now, the IRC, and I want to come to a judgment, what has happened is that the president could normally not approve the RC, and firstly, that judgment was given day before yesterday. And when we receive papers, we oppose the judgment. Obviously, everybody today go to court for a second test against any executive order, etc. And we are appealing the judgment. We are appealing the judgment because we still believe that the issue of fiscals and determination of salaries is an executive function, not a judicial function. It's one person who's serving the pairs, whatever, even if the commission have got a recommending power. Now the commission have recommended, in this case, the commission recommended 7%. The president approved the 5%. And the judgment does not say the president was they don't say the president had acted wrongly. It says the president did not apply his mind in coming to a 5%. Which it does not say that, it does not say, the court cannot say approve 7%. Because the president has got determines the salary. But all they say the president did not apply his mind to the circumstances pertaining to magistrates. And they felt that he did not consider their position, their functions, compared to others. And the judgment says it is submitted back to the president for the president to apply his mind. Another person would have said, no, if the president has not applied his mind, then let's advise the president to apply his mind and come to the determination, which may be 3% or 4%, whatever. The IRC have got the recommending power. The president determines. The argument is that the president does not apply his mind on particular aspects. Obviously, our view is that it's not the duty of the president to listen to every person. The ex says there's a committee that do that. Listen to people, look at the evaluation, and that's the RC. Now, our view is that if the president must leave the report of the RC and start the process again and listen to everybody, whatever, then it becomes a mockery of the system. But that's our view. All those things will be decided by parliament. We say there was a consideration which have happened at various levels. There were reports, Chief Justice, in terms of judges, whatever, and all those in totality informed the president to come to a decision. It's not, in our view, it's not so that the president did not apply his mind and just came with 5%. Let's look at other aspects. Now, all I'm trying to say is that the powers of this, okay, and that case, which was delivered yesterday, which if it will be meeting with the presidency this week to take a move on. If we are going to appeal, it will take some time, years, whatever, etc. And I don't think that parliament must stop functioning because the court is deciding something. The court have got their own function, parliament have got their own function. Parliament must continue to make laws and to resolve and make resolutions in terms of the law. And if somebody takes the order of parliament again to court tomorrow, when the other matter comes to court on Friday, parliament will sit and make the law. Parliament won't sit and wait for Bloemfontein, Concord, child parliament, whatever. They've got distinct functions, whatever. Hence, the determination of this 5.5%, although there's a background around the court, the parliament must take it into account with its function in terms of the Massive Court Act. They can keep in the back of their mind that they say matter before court, whatever, but necessarily the argument that the matter must be stayed until the matter is resolved, it may not assist anyone because the court cannot tell parliament what to do, much as parliament cannot tell the court what to do. So what I've heard and speak from the National Assembly is that in view of the fact that there are people who have asked to come and make a decision, they may want to listen to them. Not that they, so who they decide. Not that they're going to, whatever decision they're going to take, but the approval part lies with Parliament. So I would have suggested that
perhaps we separate magistrates from judges for that perspective, and then we deal with, in Parliament, deal with magistrates after they have listened to people who have submitted, they want to make their views considered by this Parliament, through Parliament approves or otherwise disapproves. Thanks.
Honorable Manzini, Honorable Mzimande, Honorable Gunda.
Thank you, Chair. I will repeat myself. I'm still seconding what the Honorable Joseph said. And we have to take into consideration about the Sotho saying that we have to deal with who is before us. Then that other one, maybe if there are going to be changes, then there will be changes. But also to say that no, those who ask to present themselves to this committee should be given that latitude. Thank you.
Honorable Zimande?
Yes. Chairperson, you see what Honorable Skosana said in terms, and quoted in terms of the functions of Parliament, which is it's not saying that we have powers to determine the remuneration either. I just want to put that quite clear. That it says, it uses the word approve. I don't want to get to the dictionary or the legal understanding of what the approve means. But it says a notice served before this committee for approval and how this that notice can lapse. And of course, deliberations like this, it's part of the approval process. That I agree. The point I'm making, Chair, is that at the disapproval or the approval, in terms of our own functioning as Parliament, is not necessarily a solution to the complaint on the determination. Let's be clear on that one. It's got nothing to do with us dealing with the issues of determination per se, because we are not empowered to do with determination except to say, let's satisfy ourselves as the committee that people were given the opportunity to make representation, and that that's all what the approval process would entail in some detail. Therefore, in essence, I was also not saying that we must not, in terms of the letters, now responding to your letters, Chair, that you've read to us. In fact, one other matter was that you had the second letter, Joas, I think you said, is even proposing a way forward there, that there is another option of petitioning the justice. They might even petition Parliament so that we are able then to determine the further process to assist in also for our own functioning and for our own responsibility, look into the process of this. But I'm not too sure, Chair, that I think the department, the Minister of Justice is answerable in terms of and the Magistrate Commission in terms of those magistrate going into industrial action or marching and all those actions that are proposed. But as from where I'm seated, Chair, I don't have, except what that, and you are saying it's not a letter that is signed by, that is an extra of those that are supporting the view. Might be someone who just decided to write on without consulting others. The first letter, for instance, Mrs. Larson, I think you said. I don't know who she consulted, and it's her concerns and all those kind of. So the point I'm saying, Chair, is that we need to address ourselves in terms of the notice that's before us, bearing in mind that we have no determination powers per se. We have only the powers to look at the notice and satisfy ourselves in terms of the notice. But allowing, of course, facilitating in terms of the spirit of the Constitution, allowing fairness to prevail to such an extent. And it doesn't stop us, Chair, to make a recommendation that as a committee here, we think that there are gaps. We think that we do see the points that the magistrates are making in terms of the gaps in the salaries. But that doesn't talk to the approval and all that. And my understanding as well, Chair, is that the process of determination in terms of the IRC is that it's a once-off, it gets renewed annually from the department will have to attest that. The judge is appointed, but when they do that, like now, they've completed the work. So the commission is not there. So it's not a sitting commission. What we are told is that it concludes its work and it passes on and it stopped working until such other date as it required to look into the following year's determinations and all that and all that. But as it stands, I would think that there is that lapsing period between each process of determination that's given as a task to the committee. Thank you, Chair. To the commission.
Honorable Gunda and Honorable Matina.
No, Chair, I heard what Mr. Susana said to us. All I want to ask, it is strange that in this country that the prosecutor is getting far more money than the magistrates. And if you read through these letters, this thing has not been addressed. We as a committee, we must sit now. But I want to ask this question, Chair. Is it possible that we can meet with this committee, this
committee? You're referring to the commission.
Yeah. Can we meet with them? Because I've got a lot of questions I want to ask them. I can't ask these people these questions. They won't answer those questions. Please, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Matila, Honorable Bloom. Can you conclude? Can we conclude?
Chair, I'm just saying you're putting us into a very difficult situation. You see, you bring matters before us. If there are problems with those matters, we can't do anything about them. You see, because I want to understand the purpose of hearing those people. If we can't intervene, you see, I want to understand that, because you see, it will be misleading to those people. When they come here, we listen to them. We just write a recommendation that will never be implemented. You see, which is another problem. Why don't go through that process? You see, why must we go through that process? You see, because I would agree. Let us not approve, but not even call them. Indicate to them that this matter is not within our hands. We just write directly to them that even if we call you to listen to you, there's nothing we can do because it's within the commission and the president that must deal with all these issues. It's not within parliament. Parliament does not have any jurisdiction to determine what must happen. The only thing is they can only approve what is brought before us, you see, or disapprove, you see. Because I'm saying, why must we then strain ourselves with something that we can't do anything about? Because, you see, I'm trying to compare all these things. This matter is brought here. You're asking us that question. To approve or not to approve. And if I was to think, and I was saying, these people can take this matter forward to the court, whatever, but we approve, you see. In the meantime, they've got a salary that comes to them. While this fight, because we've already been told that this matter can take 2 years, can take a year.
Mm.
We're already told that because the department is appealing, you see. But watch the embarrassment that will come to government, you see. We must note how many cases we have lost in court, including the Constitutional Court. Watch the embarrassment that will come to this particular government. You see. That might not be in the industrial action, but note all the cases government have lost because of non-proper advice to government. Non-proper advice to government. It's a string of matters. It's a string of matters, and they are still coming.
Yeah.
Well, the information bill is one of them that is sitting in front of us.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, unless there's a way that we can intervene. If we can't intervene, why involve ourselves into something that we can intervene?
Yes.
That's the question I'm asking.
Yes.
You see? You can imagine those people coming here, we listen to them with high hopes.
yeah.
that we will do something to this matter.
Expectation.
And then we end up saying we've heard you, but there's nothing we can do. We will recommend that the powers that be must look into this particular matter. What's going to happen here? They'll go out there and say that parliament is useless.
Yeah.
That's what they will say to you. No? Then that's another embarrassment, that that parliament is useless because these are the issues they can't even intervene. You see? Now we have the second situation. This committee is sitting here. I'm not sure if you are realizing with that other committee. If we disapprove, they approve. Or we approve, they disapprove. Do you understand? Yeah, I know mediation will come and all those things. But understand this confusion that will come into play. You see? And what we will be faced with. Because the next thing is, this whole matter will be in the media, then we'll be running around all
but
those
still, things. We have to decide on all matters.
That's what I'm saying.
We have to decide.
Yeah. And I've said my view, it will be to say, to write to these people and say, look, there are these channels, they can advise you about the channels that they can follow. It is unfortunate in terms of the law. You then quote that particular act, whatever law, and say, this is what you need to do, because in terms of that, this committee has
not been... Matilda, can we deal with the letter after the meeting? I want you to address yourself to the issue at hand.
No, Chair. Can I
understand that.
You introduced this thing, because when we're saying we're approving, you then said no, before you approve.
Let us deal with it after we have finalized the issue of the judges and the magistrates. You will raise how we should address how we should respond to their letter.
But my understanding is we have dealt with the judges, we have approved. No?
Yeah.
When we are approving the issue around the magistrates, you stopped us, you brought in these letters and say, before you approve, and you also brought a recommendation to say you want to recommend that we must not approve.
No, the
magistrate one.
No,
Louis, you asked, what is it that you are saying? Then you say, no, it's a recommendation. That's what you said.
I'm making a point of order.
Hello, Mr. Mandy.
I'm saying, Chair, I'm saying, Chair, I made a proposal and it was seconded. So on the table here we have two motions on the table, and mine was seconded and Matilda still seconds. So I'm not sure if moving forward might be that we then try and find ourselves into a resolution. Thank you, Chair.
No, Bloom.
Chairperson. And second, if I Bloom.
No, Chairperson, you know, after you open the seal of the two letters, I will strongly propose let us approve the judges and hear these two bodies or this body. You see, it's a very dangerous thing. If these people can go, even if we can't do anything, what in Tata Matila, even if we can't do anything, Chair, on changing that. But you see, when people are voting and send you to Parliament, they are expecting you to listen at least to them, even if you can't change that thing.
Mm.
But they are getting that hope that Parliament have listened. I mean, this body, Juaza, are saying, can you please just listen? We will bring. I will propose strongly. Let us approve the judges and not approve the magistrates, and listen to the magistrates, and we move forward.
Honorable Joseph,
I support. I've called for that separation. Thank you. I do not. I'm not saying we must disapprove the magistrates. I think what we're saying is that we postpone that decision and give that hearing, as Honorable Matilda also indicated was how we're going to respond to the letters. So I'm still saying that we need to approve the judges and then postpone the decision on the magistrates until we've given the whoever we want to invite a hearing. Thank you.
Honorable Gunda, Honorable Matilda.
Chair, my question then is, will this postponement of the magistrates not have an effect on their salaries, and will there be another gazette to be another time to be gazetted
What's happening?
Honorable.
No, Chair. With the persuasion that we must listen to them, I would agree, withdraw the support for approval. I will then agree to say, let us disapprove the magistrates one, call them, but let us also make sure that when we call them in, we also call the department to come and make all these explanations of these disparities, you see, so that whatever recommendation we write to the president, there's this committee, to say go and to?
It's informed.
Yeah, then we are informed to say, but these are the problems that we are faced with, this is the situation, and because they will explain that for the last 5 years, the department has failed them to put these things forward, you see, and that will be part of our recommendation to say, because the department has failed them, intervene as the president and deal with this particular matter. And that will solve all these other problems.
Okay.
Is it? Chair.
Honorable Mande.
Chairperson.
Yes, sir.
I want to put it on record. It's a minority view, I guess, that the matter would do the resolution of not approving the magistrate, and we don't have the benefit of whether this is the entire consultation of the magistrates to disapprove. It might affect others. So we have no ability except those that brought the matter here that perhaps are concerned with the situation with the proposal of 5.5. Therefore, Chair, I state for a record that I personally stand by the proposal that the 5.5% is not linked to the grievances that people have in terms of the salary gap and the salary structure, and therefore, Chair, I still say that I put on the table that it must be approved together with the judges, this 5.5%, and that we give them the hearing, and that we therefore recommend a separate process of trying to mitigate the circumstances that they would have raised with us, because it stands to reason that might be an option that would be effective in assisting them forward. So the value of consulting them would be to allow and to recommend processes that will deal with their situation. But approving but 5.5% as determined by the an empowered office, I think that I personally approve, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Zimande, as you have correctly said, that yours is a minority view. We don't have to delay this matter any further. We agree and approve the judge's remuneration and not approve the magistrates. And we will speed up the process of responding to the letters we have received and calling those people together with the department so that there is no further delay in effecting the decision. Agreed?
Chair, we agree.
Yeah.
In calling on the department, we want the head of the department to be here because we want some responsibility.
Okay. Sorry, Chair. What
just
if the
moment,
NA approved
moment,
it?
Just a moment. Honorable Joseph.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I just want to make sure when we have the next meeting, I expect the department here, but I want to make sure that we have, and I'm sure when the department is here, they represent all other opinions. But if we do need a legal opinion, you know, or advice rather, from senior people in the department, not the department of justice, but from our legal department, legal section of the government. I respected the province view that they are coming here on behalf of their legal opinion, but I just wanted to make sure that we have, that this committee is also advised by the state's legal advisors.
Honourable members, the committee, having considered the draft notice and schedule determining the written with effects from 1st April 2012 at which salaries, allowance and benefits are payable to constitutional court judges and judges annually submitted for approval by Parliament in terms of Section 2.4 of the Judges Remuneration and Conditions of Employment Act 2001, Act No. 47 of 2001, and referred to the committee, recommends that the Council approve the said draft notice and schedule. Agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Can we deal with the second item, the briefing on the Sheriff Amendment Bill?
Honourable Members, I'm with Mr. Johan Laveskagne. He's the senior drafter of the legislation. I will basically give an overview from a present perspective. He will highlight some of the proposed amendments to the act that we are proposing from the department side for consideration by this Honourable House. And I think I thought, Chair, it would also be important just to spell in brief, give a background to what the Sheriff's Institution is about and how it operates and how it impacts on access to justice and service delivery broadly. So the presentation I'll give at high level, beyond the bill, will basically give the perspective of the sector, the sector, and also what we seek to achieve in terms of this bill. What are the challenges that are there in practice? How do we need to intend to strengthen the governance of the profession? How do we deal with the issue of fuzzy funds, etc.? So I will give a crisp overview of the process. Chair, the sheriffs as we know them are what we basically, I'm going to select on page 2. The sheriffs are basically what we call the police for the civil justice system. While the criminal justice system got South African Police Force, so we pay and take care of them. In the civil justice system, there are sheriffs who are not paid by the state, but who are paid by people who use our services. And their fees are determined by the rules board and approved by the minister. So it's basically a private entrepreneurship. Any person in this country is free to become a sheriff if they wish to pursue that career. So, and that career, certainly in terms of Sheriff's Act of 1990. Before that dispensation, Chair, we had what we used to call messengers of the court. We had sheriffs who were appointed by government, and they were employed as messengers of the court, and they were paid a salary, and government used to buy them cars, and government used to give them to rent storages for goods they confiscate, and every proceed they used to get when they dealt with execution auctions used to go into a government coffers. We have now moved away from this institution to a privatized institution where they operate among themselves as a business. And all we have to do and what this parliament has to do is to provide a regulatory framework for that business to continue and to enhance access to justice. The challenge with this problem is that the current sheriff dispensation is still predominantly white. Of the 234 sheriffs, we have 167 which are white, and we've got only 36 which are women. And we've got 247 vacancies which are currently being in the process of being filled, etc. Another issue of transformation, which have got transformative imperative, is that of the sheriffs who are there, the majority of the white sheriffs who are male serve affluent areas, industries, commercial areas, while black sheriffs are basically confined to the previously disadvantaged areas, marginalized areas, former township, rural villages, whatever, where they struggle to to make an income. I've said that that has been the trend over the past since 1986, because shams were appointed by magistrates, so it makes sense that the magistrates in Pitsotis will basically appoint a sheriff who's a white, and it becomes a coincidence that people who get evicted are the blacks, those who evict are the whites, who are sheriffs, who are appointed by magistrates and the police station commissioner, whatever. All those parts of the history that we all know as we move forward. And some of the outcome we want to achieve here is to change that demographics moving forward, etc. Page 3, as I've said, that the sheriffs are police in the civil service. They connect each and every stage of the civil justice process. We start the civil justice process by issuing summonses when you want to sue a person. You serve summons in the court, you send the sheriff to go and serve summonses. The other person answer by filing a plea to defend the matter. The other person may ask for further particulars or further questions, which we call a discovery. They may go around exchanging documents in a tedious, long process, which may spend over 3 to 5 years in the process. And once the pleadings have closed, which means once they finalize exchanging papers, we go to a hearing stage. And once there's a notice of set down, once the matter has been finalized, there's an order, and that order to be given effect to sheriffs. Hence, when the order is against, is with regard to attachment, that my house must be taken, must be sold because I could not pay APSA, sheriffs come and make sure and deal with that, with execute that order, etc. I've said the role of Parliament is to provide a regulatory environment for these actors to function. The whole civil justice system is tightly regulated. You are told what form of document to serve. You are told within how many days you must serve them. You lose one step, you get kicked out, or in the name of the civil justice process, you get punitive order against you. The court grants an order against you. If you don't move within 7 days, if you don't want to defend, you get a default judgment. If you don't do with it, if you don't file up to within 30 days, the other party can sue for cost and all those things. So it's a tightly regulated process. By the rules of court which are passed by the minister, some of the rules are passed by the minister, subject to approval by parliament, etc. And the judiciary don't regulate the space. They manage the space. When we talk about case law management, we talk about judges managing the pace of litigation, making sure that people don't abuse the system, whatever, etc. People don't basically delay the process unnecessarily to the detriment of others, because all those aspects lead to service delivery challenges and all those aspects. So judges and magistrates, as judicial officers, they manage the case flow management process. Parliament and executive, they regulate the environment so that everyone in the space, attorneys, lawyers, are able to get involved and to achieve the end result of every given case, etc. I've said now chefs are appointed in terms of magisterial districts. We've got 386 magisterial districts in this county. This county is divided into small districts. It puts underway to align those districts to the municipal district. But what's important is that each and every district is then entitled to have a sheriff. The reality is that of all the 384 districts, we've got 15% of those districts which we classify as large service areas for sheriffs, which makes a lot of money, which are lucrative. You are Sandton, you are Midrand, you are Cape Town, you are Pretoria. Sheriffs here in Sandton, sheriffs in Sandton generate about 14 million per annum. A sheriff in Butterworth generates about 250,000 per annum. A sheriff in Sinwabarana and Limpopo generates about 150,000 per annum. A sheriff in Pretoria, where there's high activity commercial, generates about 9 million per annum. We have figures and statistics of every sheriff in every area, because the current, what they do, they pay levies on the basis of what they earn. And those levies are used to administer the FISA fund, which protects public interest. So like attorneys, all sheriffs have got their fund. If they basically attach the wrong process and got sold and it come out to find that it was wrong. The victim have got the right to claim against the fund for compensation, and the fund protects guarantees the public interest. Those people are compensated. If they break your door, they knock at the wrong door, and they found that in fact they were not supposed to. They've got that access missed, but they've already damaged the gates and the doors when they got in, whatever. The fund must replace all those other aspects. If a sheriff, because sheriff all keeps such money, if they take my house for execution, they keep the funds in trust until they transfer them to other person. Many of them eat the money. They embezzle the funds. And people cannot be disadvantaged because the sheriff has disappeared with the funds which he accrued as part of attachment. Then the family fund must come in and basically protect the consumer, the end user of the system, who's innocent. So that's the role of the fund. So every sheriff, every unpaid the tariff for the management of the fund. So a board for sheriff is appointed to manage the fund amongst others and also regulate the other sheriffs. They are not accountable to the Minister of Justice. They are accountable to the minister appoints and removes. In terms of what they do every day, there's a board that oversee what they do. If there are complaints, people must take complaints to your board. The board must have structures to discipline them, and if they cannot, if the misconduct is so serious that it warrants removal, they must come back to the minister to recommend removal. So that's the importance of the board. It's in a way a kind of a self-regulatory function, etc. Now, I was saying that 15% are in affluent areas, 65% are medium offices. Whilst we've got 6% in this country, which are under-resourced. In fact, they're non-serviceable. There are areas in Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northern Cape where we can't even get a sheriff because nobody's interested to apply. You won't be able to sustain an office. You won't be able to appoint staff. You won't be able to buy a buggy to serve process. You won't be able to have a storeroom for you to store goods that you have attached. And therefore, if the money you are supposed to make there does not allow you even to pay rent, whatever, it's going to figure. It makes very difficult to get a sheriff. We advertise for position, we don't get people to advertise. And it is in those areas where we get challenges of service delivery, where we get women who go to court and get protection orders, they don't get served because they're not sheriffs. And they get, and we had cases in Northern Cape where people were killed because there was no one to serve the service of process. There are no sheriffs, you cannot attract any person. So what this bill seeks to do, seeks to look at those areas so that we can introduce a hybrid system where we can have state sheriffs, people employed by government, to make sure in those areas where you're not able to get a sheriff, you can appoint or designate a serving official to go there and serve that process so that those people can have equal access to justice like people who stay in business, whatever, etc. So that's the major part of this bill. We introduce for the first time a hybrid system that is going to provide for a private sheriff in an area where sheriff can live, can make a business, can generate income, can appoint staff, and can enhance job opportunities for everybody else, like in Sandton. A sheriff in Sandton, because sheriffs and staff have got deputies. Sheriffs in Sandton have got more than 15 deputies because of the work volume, because of the lucrative of the area, because of the auctions, houses, whatever. A sheriff in Lusaka City does not have deputies, because there's not even enough money to sustain yourself, even to put gasoline into your own car, whatever. So those are the aspects that we wanted to check. And there are areas where we can't even get a sheriff. In Free State, there are many. In Northern Cape, there are many people, distances, whatever. So this bill seeks to recommend provide for the appointment of state employees where circumstances so desire for them to serve services that are accrued, that are assigned by law to sheriffs. Obviously, the state sheriff will not do anything because the state sheriff will be paid by government, will be given the resources, the car, and everything by government to the process, and every money generated through the service will come to state coffers. And because you cannot have the sheriff in the state also being attached under the regulatory framework of the Fidelity Fund. If it's Fidelity Fund, it's a private fund, but where we have state employees, the state takes the risk of whatever conduct action that emanates from that functionality at the end of the day. The main other important thing that this bill seeks to do, other than the state sheriff, it seeks to strengthen the governance framework of the board. The current yellow house structure, it provides for a board of sheriff, which I've said it got three major functions. One is the administration of the fund for the sheriffs. Two is the regulatory in terms of complaints handling for the sheriff. Three is the function of training for the sheriff. But four, they've got a very important function. They issue licenses to conduct business. And which function has got a veto over the minister? The minister appoints the sheriff. But a sheriff, once a sheriff has been appointed, is for the sheriff who must go to the board and ask for a valid fund certificate, which is a license to conduct the business. And only after being given the certificate, you are then able to go to the field to go and conduct any business, etc. We are joined by a member from the board. It's an investigator who also complains. He will share with you how many complaints are being received in Buso, how many complaints are being received, and how they deal with them from the board perspective. Now this bill seeks to change the current composition of the board. Currently, the board is comprised of not less than six members and not more than nine members, which must come from different provinces, and other state officials and other members of the board who are not sheriffs, who must not be more than six. In terms of composition, the board is skewed in favor of sheriffs currently. There are many sheriffs in the board than other interest groups. It's one of the contested areas. The sheriffs want to be on the board themselves and don't want others to serve there because they issue the licenses. They want to monopolize the business and set who they issue the license to. Two, they want to make sure that when they do the investigations, whatever, there's a lot of coverage because sheriffs, they protect each other against the public fund, etc. So complaints against the sheriffs from the people end up not getting the best of considerations because it's a guilty investigating the other perpetrators, which create a challenge. We recommend here that we create a multidisciplinary board where sheriffs will not be in the majority. The act proposes five sheriffs and proposes six non-sheriffs. And obviously, we suggest that the chairperson of the board will be from the six at the end of the day, so that there's a fair kind of objectivity and impartiality, and basically checks and balances on the self-regulation. And we do that in view of protecting the interest of the public at the end of the day. The six people that we propose, the five sheriffs will come from the nomination by associations, are different associations of sheriffs, which have been established in various areas. The SANAP, South African Progressive Sheriffs Association, the Institute of Sheriffs of South Africa, etc. So they'll nominate people to comprise the five. But the six people that we suggest, one is a person who comes from the attorney's profession, nominated by the law side of South Africa, two, a nominee from the National Credit Regulator, because the work of the sheriff's interface with that of the National Credit Regulator is a debt management environment where all the principles need to be to kind of be a cross pollination of all the principles and values that apply to your industry. And then three fit and proper persons by the minister. We say that the minister and these people are people who must have expertise in financial matters, in actuarial services, who will be able to manage the fund above others, but also people bring in the skills in terms and the will add value from the human rights perspective. Make sure that sheriff's profession is being transformed from what has been perceived to be people who does whatever to people who basically provide a service to your people in terms of the civil justice system, etc. And then the sixth person obviously will be somebody who will represent the minister at the board. One point of we also seek to strengthen the whole arrangement of the acting of the appointment regime of the sheriffs, provide in there for the minister to be able to make acting appointments while there are vacancies. the current act as it is does not provide for an acting appointment outside the sheriff's bodies. It does not, in somebody who would rather the law, never anticipated that there will be vacancies. Perhaps they anticipated that the sheriff's will be there for forever, etc. And we've got serious problems. We've got 247 vacancies currently, and because we can't appoint people outside the system, the very same sheriffs who are in the system, they are acting all in non-vacant offices. So we find a sheriff for Port Elizabeth. It's also a sheriff for the neighboring areas. Four or five, one person sharing about five or six offices, because the law does not allow an acting appointment by them from outside the system. When there's a vacancy in Cape Town, the minister must go and check who is the sheriff for Belleville and appoint the sheriff to be also a sheriff from here. So that's why we thought that this will also help strengthen the process, etc. The last point that we wanted to put in the Honorable Chair members is that in terms of its function of awarding licenses to conduct business, there are no guidelines, there are no programs in place that assist the board, that compels the board to take progressive measures to ensure access to the profession by all people, including women and blacks. Now, if you apply for a sheriff in the past, the master was able to appoint the one who's got the sparky, who's got money in the bank, who's be able to run the practice. And if you come there, you don't have all those things, you are already at a disadvantage, you can't be appointed. The new arrangement provides measures that there should be means through the faculty fund, through the other means, to make sure that people are being empowered through training programs, through backups, through shortages, that people are able to raise money and be able to manage businesses on their own, etc. No bank will refuse to give any person funding to run a sheriff's business in Sanchez. And the challenge is that while there's no shortage, there's no assistance from the people, from the board itself, there's no way that we're going to get the other people entering the system. The reality of the problem is that every sheriff's offices up to now that run mainly as family business, because we find one person who's got the deputy, who's his wife, who's got the children all involved there, and there's been that practice of inheriting over the other when the other passed on. We cannot use public service for that purpose. Hence, this bill tries to open up the whole profession to broadly to all South Africans. And there are many other transformation initiatives underway that will transform this environment, Honorable Chair. One of them includes the whole program of the civil justice reform process, where we are looking at different mechanisms of serving processes. The way they still do the work now, if you sue someone for maintenance, the clerk of the court or the lawyer will send a summons to the sheriff, even if they know that JB's Kosana has got an email address working in the Department of Justice, he's every day in Parliament, whatever, etc. No, they start a 4x4 and go and look for making Mpumalanga affair. And they make sure they don't get married the first time so they can go the second time. And they charge all the costs in terms of the petrol and everything, whatever, so that they generate their own income. And the civil justice review process is going to compel them that where there's a database, where people are known where they are, you can serve your process. You can serve your summonses by email, by iPad, by everything, so that it basically also help accelerate and improve the access to justice imperatives. Those are the high-level policy imperatives. And before members basically give their comments, Johan have prepared basic formulations which he may want to basically briefly articulate members, then we can then be available to provide whatever answers that the Honorable House may want to hear from us. Thanks, Chair. Just the last point, we've consulted extensively on this bill with the board for sheriffs, with the other stakeholders, and the only point where there was slight disjunction was with regard to the composition of the board. Obviously, the board, the sheriffs wanted to retain the status quo, that they've been the measuring the board, etc. And the minister has indicated that democracy does not dictate that people must have space to have to participate and have their voice heard in all the structures that ensures access to justice. things. Otherwise, in respect of all the other matters, they support the bill, and I'm sure that Mbuso also confirm that if that's not the case. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, Commissioner, you said you're still about Kasne, will take us through, or you have...
will be guided by this House, Chair, how you want to look. Because Mr. Laris Kasne has got technical amendments, actual formulations, yes.
Honourable members, should you take us through? Honourable Blue.
Chairperson, yeah. You know, this is a very complicated piece of legislation, and I will propose that we get time in going through this thing on our own, and then come and debate and make inputs into this. I don't have a problem if he briefs us. But I will really plead that we must have time to go and read it and come with our views. Thank you,
Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. That was my view. And also to indicate to Mr. Skosa, you know, it's very nice to, if you are briefing a person, you don't bring a lot of examples where, and you don't go through the documentation, but you are briefing as if these people doesn't understand. I'm not arrogant, I don't understand. It gives us doubt as to whether this thing has been properly researched. I know there are a lot of people who seek to close the loopholes. Go as the document is provided, you go through. When you ask questions, is where you come with a broader explanation. I mean in future, but when you were briefing, I just sat down and didn't listen. Because once you give a lot of examples, you know, man, it indicates another thing. I don't want to explain the word warrior. You can be shocked. Sometimes you don't know. Can I explain that one? The warrior. Yeah. Warrior in the police department. There was a book is there, written false administration. It was written. It's still there just now, but we don't use it. Is it? If you are briefing or talking to a black person, you must repeatedly ask him or her whether he or she understands you. That's why when you go about this, a lot of them, I become bored, you know. I'm sorry, it's not racism, but it is written, it's just like that. Thank you, Mr. Skosa.
No, Chairperson. Chairperson, yeah, I think. Because you see, we have been given a lot of information now that we must go through. You know? And I've repeatedly said to the department, you know, if you bring documentation to us at that point and you brief, you know, and a lot of briefings, and that's what happens in most of the departments, the first problem is for us to start engaging with that particular process becomes difficult. That's where the first problem is. And I'll plead that in future, let us just make sure that we get documentation in time so that we can go through. When we go through the briefing, some questions are already there. Exactly. Are already there so that we can start engaging. And that's what we want to plead with. I mean, since this morning, as seated here, the police are briefing some, there's a dialogue, we must go there now. You know? That's far is enough for us. I'm not sure as to how we're going to cope that side. And these are the issues we always raise. And there's a lot of documentation that I've just got the file. It's this thick. You know? And as to how do we go through those things at the same time, it's another problem. That's the plea we want to make. What we want to plead is in terms of our next meeting, we would have gone through this documentation. You know, Yeah. The technical aspects will then be brought to us then. Then we'll ask questions because he will be there making sure that he's keeping us through this particular bill itself. Because another thing is because we have so many papers here every day, the bill might have been there with us, but we focused on something else because that is urgent, you know. We did not go through the bill itself, you see. And these are some of the challenges we are faced with, you see, because you might find that the three, four members have one secretary. How does that secretary also cope? Which is a problem, that's the challenge with this parliament. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Fumane?
Chairperson, they want more money, they must work. So let's have this technical thing done with this prefect. Because we want to come back and engage with them. So if we leave another briefing for another time, I don't know, Chair, unless we have a lot of time this year to do this stuff. But in my view, is that presenting the technical stuff, I mean, presenting this bill and the technical stuff, that's what they are here to do. We scheduled to sit until that time. We still have the committee time, Chair. So I don't know why do we have to postpone this, to postpone the further briefing on the matter. So
no, we'll continue.
All right.
Setela Buskakhne, can you take us through the briefing? Ramatila, that is why I go police.
Chair, I indicated that I've been there.
You can go.
I must just.
Yes, you can go. Take us through the Telemuska.
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you want me to go clause by clause through the bill? Okay. Chairperson, first of all, I need to indicate that this bill, as Mr. Skosana indicated, seeks to address certain issues. If you look at the preamble, we make it clear that this is only an interim measure pending the comprehensive review of the Act. So this is only, the purpose is basically to address major problems that are being experienced at the moment. Then I also just want to indicate, as far as the consultation process is concerned, we did consult. Prior to the introduction of the bill, the department consulted with all the bodies indicated in the memorandum on the objects. The portfolio committee also invited public comments on the bill. They held public hearings. So consultation has taken place. Chairperson, then if we go to the bill itself, I prepared quite a comprehensive note where I discuss all the provisions of the bill, and I'm going to work from that document for purposes of this briefing. I think members are in possession of that document. Chairperson, clause 1 amends section 1 by clause 1 substitutes certain definitions and to bring them in line with existing legislative provisions, and also inserts a new definition of department, which is necessary for purposes of some of the provisions that we propose to include in the Principal Act.
Can I just indicate to members on their documents is on page 9. Page 9 of your documents. Page 9. This one, Commission. Oh, this one, yes, this one, Commission. Yes, page 9. Yes. We can continue.
Clause 2 amends section 2 of the Act, which deals with the appointment of sheriffs. Provisions that now make that the minister may, after considering the report of an advisory committee, appoint the sheriff. Now, advisory committees are appointed in each of the 9 provinces to do short listing and then to make recommendations to the minister as far as the possible persons to be appointed as sheriffs, and then from that list the minister then make the appointments. Clause 3 provides for the payment of allowances for members of those advisory committees. Members of those committees which are not in the full-time employ of the state. The Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development determines those allowances with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. Chairperson, as far as clause 4 is concerned, Mr. Skosana has already indicated to the committee the problem with acting sheriffs. So I'm not going to go into too much detail there. What is important is that the minister may only appoint an acting after consultation with the judicial officer in whose area of jurisdiction the vacancy is, and subject to a written confirmation by the board for sheriffs that it will issue a fidelity fund certificate to such an acting person or acting sheriff. And then of course the minister also appoints such an acting on the conditions that he or she determines. Then clause 4 also substitutes the existing section 5(1)(a) to provide that the minister may, for a particular lawsuit and on the condition that he or she determines, appoint another sheriff if, for example, objection is raised against the sheriff of that area, then the minister can appoint another person to perform the functions of that sheriff. At present, only an acting sheriff can be appointed for those purposes. Clause 5 deals with the appointment, as Mr. Skosana called it, state sheriffs or people in the employ of the department to perform certain functions and duties of sheriffs, so I'm not going to go into too much detail there. Clause 5 also seeks to insert a proposed new section 6B, which makes provision for the performance of functions of a sheriff other than the service of process of any court or any other document within an area for which no sheriff or acting sheriff has been appointed. Such a sheriff or acting sheriff may only be appointed by the minister after consultation with the board for sheriffs and on the conditions that the minister determines. Clause 6 substitutes existing section 8, which deals with the objects of the board. I think Mr. Skosana has given a detailed explanation what we intend to do, for example, development and implementation of measures, develop guidelines for the appointment of deputy sheriffs, so I'm not going to deal with that one. Clause 7 deals with the composition of the board. There again Mr. Skosana dealt with the matter. It's a long clause, and I think his briefing document gives a good summary of what we intend to do, basically to change the composition. At present, the board consists of 12 members. We now propose that it be reduced to 11 members. clause out, which amends section 11, is only contain consequential amendments. I'm not going to go into detail there. Sable's clause 9, consequential amendments which are necessary as a result of the recomposition of the board. Clause 13 of the Act at present provides that a member of the board who is not in a full-time employment of the state may be paid from the funds of the board such allowances as the board may determine. Clause 10 substitutes section 13 to make it clear that not only members of the board who are not only members of the board but also members of committees of the board will be entitled to such allowances. An important clause is clause 13, which seeks to insert a new section 14A in the Act, which provides for the dissolution of the board by the minister in certain circumstances, the appointment of an interim board, the period for which such an interim board may be appointed, which may not exceed 6 months. Then provision is further made for convening of special meetings of the interim board, the quorum of a meeting, and procedures to be followed by that interim board. Clause 12 amends section 16 of the Act, which deals with the general functions of the board, by adding a further function in terms of which the board we are now giving the board the power to make rules to regulate the conduct of its own proceedings. At present, there are no specific rules that regulate the conduct of proceedings of the board. Mr. Skosana also mentioned the Fidelity Fund and the purpose of that fund, and that it's being controlled by the board. We now make in clause 13, which amends section 27, we now make provision that the maximum amount that the board may be recovered by the board from the fund must be determined by the board in consultation with the minister. In other words, so that the board cannot recover ridiculous amounts. But I think Mr. Skosana, if he is in questions about this clause, Mr. Skosana will be able to give more detail there. Present section 28 of the Act deals with the auditing of records and statements of the board and provides that those records and statements must be audited by an auditor appointed by the board. We now, in clause 14, amend section 28 to provide that an auditor who does such audit must in his audit report indicate whether the money has been used for the purposes authorized by the Act, and that audit report must also then, within 30 days, be submitted to the Minister of Justice, so the Minister can see what is the financial position of the board. Chairperson, then clause 16 amends section 62 of the Act, which empowers the minister to make regulations. The reason for these amendments, you will see, is basically regarding the advisory committees. We, for example, provide for the establishment of the committees in every province, the appointment of members of such committees, powers and functions of such committees. And then clause 17, Chairperson, contains the short title of the bill. And then lastly, the JTM tagged this bill as a section 75 bill. It was approved by the National Assembly on the 13th of June. The portfolio committee proposed two very minor amendments, and was then which resulted in this bill before the committee today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think we have to note the presentation. We are still going to go through it, and then we will meet again with you, and maybe the engagements will ensue from there. But thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, this brings us to the end of the meeting, and I will request members to remain for about 2 minutes so that Gashin brief them about the preparations to Germany. Thank you very much.
Members, I've just got a quick brief update for members. The I dealt with all the financial aspects of the trip. So the flights are booked to Germany. We've booked the local flights, and we're just confirming flight times to get members to Johannesburg at least 3 hours before the time. The we submitted also the S&Ts to our finance section. They've processed it, but they've told us that they can, that according to their supply chain manager, they can only pay members and staff the S&Ts a week before the trip. So those are ready for payments, but our finance section is keeping it until a week before the trip. And then the update you've had from us about the visas, that is in the process of happening.
Okay, let me raise my hand so that you must answer. I'm sure that you know there's a problem with me and Louis with the forms.
Yeah.
So is it being addressed?
Moss is has got the forms for members to sign. Let me get Moses so that he can make sure that members have got that signed.
Yeah. No, the forms, I don't know, is it visa forms or what?
Visa forms.
But the second thing is that I don't want to sit in the same situation with Uganda, where we get our passport there at the airport. The program as well, we need information before we go there. It's the 22nd. At least a week before the time, we must have what is the weather, what is what, all this information, we really need it to prepare ourselves. That is my input. But I think that's all. But the next one is that on this, the briefing on the salaries, can we have the act and whatever, so that we must read through it. When we meet these people, Twaisa and all this in the department in our next meeting, then we are well prepared to interact and to participate in the meeting. Please. So that we must not say and postpone the meeting, because it's also going to affect their salary now that we have not approved their salary.
Thank you.
check that thing of the points and whatever, because I don't want, I'm having a lot of other things to do, and I don't have time to look into that thing.
How far is that? The thing is, I've got the issue people and I've got the things.
I know.
I'll push them to get it sorted, because I also want the.
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm telling you. But you know the problem. I can tell you who's the problem.
Bro, are you going for a little bit?
No. That man will sort that thing out. I know. I'm having very, very serious confidence in that man.
No, I will solve it.
Look, no, I've just asked the deal of this thing that we have been doing. This one.
I would never.